Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm well rested, well fed. Stopped by Uncle Matteo's last night as I was bragging pre-show.
I know. Are they paying you? You've mentioned like 8 times.
I'm going to send them an invoice, but I just got to say, I ordered the Big Macs, and it was big, and it was Max. It was fantastic. Hey, this is going to be a fantastic segment this morning. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone to Grand Poobah, the founder and CEO of User IQ, Mr. Aaron Aycock. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We are doing good. Why don't you, before we get too far into this, why don't you kind of share a little bit about User IQ? What do you guys do for folks?
Yeah, so what we are is a customer growth platform. And if you're a B2B SaaS company and you care...
Where customers are important.
That's right. If you consider customers important, we should talk. We're all about making sure that your customers are successful. And the main reason is that successful customers stay longer, spend more, and tell their friends about you. And so we build a platform that helps you know who your users are and deliver targeted messaging based on who they are and how they behave.
And then we're talking about SaaS, software as a service. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so SaaS, you are very familiar with the SaaS or subscription-based revenue model if you've worked with anything like Salesforce.com or Google Apps. It's the fastest growing type of software out there. Salesforce is the fastest growing large software company out there, and it's subscription based. So it's software as a service. A couple of benefits from that. You don't have to buy giant licenses and spend millions of dollars. You can start off
and have boxes of CDs or DVDs anymore.
That may or may not be used sitting on the shelf. So it's subscription based. You pay as you go. And so it's an interesting business model, because it gives you a lot of flexibility, a lot of power. It puts power into the hands of the users of the software. But it's also interesting for the makers of software, because you not only have one-time deal to sell, you have to keep your customers happy and successful,
right?
Because you're basically selling every month,
right?
That's
you got to earn your keep every month.
That's right.
Well, you're very articulate, and you're doing a fantastic job describing the benefits of your service, but you're paid to talk and think like that. Let's get someone in this conversation that can give us a full perspective.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
You brought somebody with you, right?
I did. I brought a guest with me. With me in the studio is Kyle Cochran. He is the VP of Operations for QA Symphony, one of our customer companies.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Thank you. Thanks, Aaron. QA Symphony, what we're about is we build test management software. We have a test management platform and a suite of products that allow businesses to be more effective in how they test their software as they prepare that for delivery to customers. And so we have test case management functionality, the ability to record your testing activities as you go, and a number of products coming to market as well that help organizations just be more efficient in how they get their jobs done.
So your work is done kind of behind the house, right? You're not in front of the customers necessarily, but you're helping the people create better software?
That's right. We are a business-to-business platform. So we sell our solutions to testing organizations and quality assurance organizations inside of organizations like Office Depot, Samsung, Amazon, and just recently American Eagle.
So what compelled you to start hanging out with these guys over at User IQ?
Yeah, a number of things. So I'm responsible for customer success as well as the operations at QA Symphony. And so our job is to make customers happy and to get them to use the software and ideally to use more of the software. And so one of the things that we look to do is to understand how our customers are accessing our tool. How often are they logging in? What parts of the functionality are they using? Who's logging in? So we sell our software on an annual basis or an annual recurring revenue basis, right? And so as they use that software, if they have 100 licenses, you know, if 50 or 60 or 70 people are logging in within, 30 days, that's usually a pretty good metric for us. Mm-hmm. If they're not, or if for some reason there's some type of drop off in that activity, that could be a warning sign or a problem. And that may cause us to have to have a proactive conversation with a customer, say, hey, Billy, what's going on over there? Has anything changed? Is there anything we can do? And so we were using a traditional a tool out there that was telling us whether an individual logged into the product or not. But it wasn't helping me understand at the account level or at the, let's just say, at the Nordstrom level, how many people inside of Nordstrom are using this tool. And so, you know, understanding the Atlanta technology community and what's going on there, and working back through one of our investment partners, BIP Capital, realized that there's a company right down the street from us, UserIQ, that's doing exactly what I was looking to get done.
This and reminds me of that commercial. I'm a pest control monitor, not a, I just monitor the problem. I don't solve it. You know that commercial?
Right. Yep.
Right? I mean, there's a distinct difference between those two levels of service, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's where we're trying to run the business is saying, okay, I may see that there is a problem and I need to go do something about it. So if that company isn't logging in on a frequent basis, we have a problem, because if that renewal is coming up 3 months, 6 months from now, and they haven't been using the product over the last couple of months, then we're not going to have a very good conversation about whether they want to keep using that product.
Right. And you don't want to have that conversation a month before it's renewal day.
No. Yeah. I mean, the earlier you can have it, the better, right? I mean, in the early days of building out the startup, it's okay, well, we sent them an agreement and let's see if they sign it as part of the renewal process. And then you start backing that conversation up 30, 60, 90 days before that renewal, but with a tool that is measuring that activity and that being a key criteria in understanding their usage and potentially their happiness, then we can have that conversation, you know, 8-9 months before.
Right, before renewal. It becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
Now, Aaron, is that one of the kind of the basic red flags, is just the usage? If if they have 100 licenses and then 10 of them are being used,
That's right.
You want to catch that as quickly as possible.
That's right. It's not always a red flag, but it's an important indicator.
Right.
Right. And so one of the conversations that we'll typically have with our customers is around when churn happens and when you should be.
So that's what you call it, is churn, is when a person doesn't subscribe or they join and then they
were a customer and they're no longer a customer. So yeah, that's really important. And in fact, SaaS companies have been around now for more than a decade, but it's still very early innings and SaaS companies are still learning a ton about how the business model works. And if you do the math on it, here's an example. Let's say that you and your team are high-fiving because you retain 95% of your customers every month.
Right.
That sounds fantastic, right?
Right.
But you're actually losing 5% per month in that through churn. And throughout the year, you've lost 60% of your subscription base. So,
ouch.
Very early on in the life cycle of a company, you're going to drive all your growth through sales. But as your company matures and with each year your subscription base grows, it becomes more and more important to retain that business. Otherwise, you're going to lose business faster than your sales team can bring it in. So companies that are 3, 4, 5 years old, they're now starting to realize, wow, we should probably put as much effort or more into retaining customers and keeping them happy than going out and grabbing new ones. That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you guys sit down and do some sort of a preliminary, ROI equation on this whole effort?
Well, so for some background, we knew QA Symphony because we're in town in Atlanta. Tech community is very small.
Yeah.
And, so we knew these guys were doing great things. It turns out that we also share an investor through VIP. But we invited QA Symphony to be part of our client advisory board. And so we started having discussions around what are the companies that are best at this doing to get better. Mm-hmm. And so that's where a lot of this conversation began, sitting down with Kyle and talking about what is customer success to you? What are you guys doing? What's important to you? And there were some fascinating conversation topics out of it. You know, customer success isn't just customer support where you send in an email and ask for help.
Solve the problem.
That's right.
That's right.
It's way more sophisticated than that. So when, you know, after a couple of meetings with the QA Symphony team, we thought, you know, Kyle, you should come in and drop some knowledge on folks.
Now, you both mentioned that you share an investor. Is that one of the benefits of having an investor, is that they're supposed to be matchmakers and help you guys, you know, kind of maximize relationships?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been introduced to a ton of really important business relationships through our investment team. Yeah, I'd
agree. I mean, you know, these guys invest in you. You do board meetings. They come in and they're looking to understand how you're doing your business. And you start to say, "Hey, I'm, you know, I'm trying to find ways to interact with customers more, to know earlier on in the process that they may not be using the tool, or that they might be likely to churn, and then, you know, they drop out. Well, there's a company right down the street. You guys should meet with them. I think, you know, they can help you guys figure out how to put a solution together.
And just by doing that and then making that introduction, that accelerates a relationship and that helps you solve your problem faster.
That's right.
And everybody wins.
That's right.
So mechanisms for securing and continuing to build loyalty. One is this net promoter score. Am I saying that? Can you speak to that a little bit, Kyle? I mean, we've heard people come in the studio and talk about it a little bit, but I have to be candid. I don't really have a good handle on this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So net promoter score is it's simply a one-question survey that you send out to your customers to say, are you likely to recommend this solution to someone else? And based on that score, there's an algorithm that will create a score that says, okay, they either are likely to recommend or not. And if you're using that that survey as a baseline, then you could start to understand, are customers gravitating more or less to your solution? Is the likeliness to recommend going up? Are you looking at those people that they call detractors who are not likely to recommend? And even, you know, might say some things that aren't good about you. If you're using those individually to follow up with those customers or those people to say, what could I do to make that different? Then over time, your NPS or your net promoter score should be going up against, you know, the base of your customers.
Now, how accurate is that as a measure, net promoter score? Because it sounds easy to me say, yeah, I'd use that company, when in actuality, I would never refer that company. How do you, is that truly accurate?
Well, first of all, NPS is very interesting in that it's as accurate as you need it to be. And it's kind of hard to judge between one industry category and another. Kyle and I have talked about NPS before, and it matters very much what industry you're in, what is a good score for NPS. If you are, for example, in the cell phone carrier business, so if you're AT&T or Verizon, your scores are going to be much, much different than if you're in the PC category, you know, like between Dell and Apple, right? And so it very much matters which category you're in. So you can't compare yourself to Delta Airlines if that's not the industry category that you're in.
So within an industry, it's pretty valid?
It is. Yeah, there's a ton of science behind this. So it was developed by Bain Consulting. So I'm sure millions of dollars were put in.
Right. Right.
And there's a lot of science behind it. What I think is most valuable about NPS is that it is so standard. Because really,
and
what
it's
we're
simple.
Looking
it's one question.
It's one right. question. Right. It's very easy to answer, right? And it's on a 0 to 10 scale. And what's most important to me in it is that you can use it as a standard base to watch trends over time. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that's what's most important. Are you getting better or are you getting worse? Are you listening to the customers that are saying, hey, I have some issues here, and then responding to them quickly? And for the customers that respond with a 9 or a 10, they're called promoters. It's a specific category. And for the promoters, what they've just said is, I am willing to tell my friends and coworkers about your product. And so what I think is a giant miss for a lot of companies that run NPS surveys is when a customer comes back and says, yeah, I'm a 9 or a 10, and you say, thanks, and move on. No, that's a perfect time to say, well, I'm glad you think that way. Here's an easy way to tell your friends about you.
That's right.
Here's a link to tweet out or whatever, right? And so you can really do a lot of powerful things with NPS surveys.
But is it more effective to just ask them if they had referred? Like, why wouldn't you ask them, have you referred my company to somebody else? And they give you that same, you know, yes, I have, or not yet, or no, I'm never going to.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because it is it's a close-ended question. It's a yes or no. Because if you have referred, if you've not referred a customer, but you'd be willing to, then your answer is no. But you don't know that they really like you.
Right.
So how willing are you? Is probably more open-ended.
But back to this whole pest monitor analogy, the key is it's not just, oh, well, that's interesting, right? You mm-hmm. do something with everybody on the scale, right? You
got
to have the discipline to reach out to the lower scores, and then you need to provide an easy path for the ones with a higher score.
That's right. And there's taking the people that will recommend you and doing something to those guys, taking the people that won't recommend you or say bad things, and doing something with those guys, and then also the people that are in that middle, right? How do you get the people in the middle to move from saying nothing to saying something, right? So in each one of those categories, and based on how they rate you on that, you know, 1 to 10 question, is some activities that you could be doing to improve your product and improve your relationship with your customers.
So when you're looking at selling the idea of working with a user IQ or using a specific strategy or tactic like Net Promoter Score, mm-hmm. It occurs to me it may involve some internal selling, right? It's a change.
Yep.
If that was the case for you, was it just all initially openly embraced, or did you get a little pushback? Because I'm not sure we all necessarily I haven't had my blood work done, and my wife keeps getting after me about that. I don't know that I want to see those numbers. Did you get a little pushback?
I mean, there's a little bit of pushback, but you know, as I assume most companies are, right? Everybody on my team is really busy. We have hundreds of activities we could be doing, but at the end of the day, if customers are not renewing the software and they're not either using the software or renewing that software, that's a problem. And so there's a number of degrees that you use and variables that you want to measure in understanding customer health, right? Did your champion just leave? Are they sending in a lot of support tickets? Are they using the product or not? And are you having those proactive conversations with customers? And so when you're building out your customer success organization, there's that health and those metrics, there's nothing more important than those to understand that likeliness to renew or that customer happiness. And so, knowing the tool that we were already using, knowing how that wasn't meeting my needs and understanding health at the account level versus just did somebody log in, it was not a difficult sell in order to say, this is what I need to do in order not only to measure my employees, but to provide the key metrics to the business in that likeliness to renew and that overall customer health.
Can you talk a little bit about QA Symphony and when you're going to market? Because it seems like a no-brainer in some respects, right? Like, hey, we help you more efficiently test your software so your software is going to work better for your customers. That seems like, no, I don't want that. Who would say no to that? Is it something where they say, oh, we have this handled in the house? Or is that what the usual pushback is? Like, because it seems like everybody would want your service.
Yeah, I mean, generally everybody that's, everybody that's coding technologies and coding software should be testing that software, right? And so there's a couple of different methodologies. But
let's pause you there. Is that not the case all the time? They're not always testing?
Well, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, you could just write code and assume your developers did a good job of doing that and release the code
Does that happen?
I mean, of course it happens, right? But I mean, it depends on size of company, number of customers, et cetera.
But like,
right? People should not do that.
50% of the time?
No. That's a very small percentage sure. So, but then there's methodologies. There used to be the way that you delivered software, 15, 20 years ago. And some companies are still doing it today and should be is through a methodology called waterfall. But a lot of companies these days have moved to an agile methodology in how they deliver software. And agile, is iterate more often, make quick changes, get those to market, understand how to modify based on those iterations. It allows teams to move more efficiently rather than, very strict phases in regards to requirements and coding.
So before they used to say, okay, we're on phase one now. So we're all on phase one and let's get phase one done by, September 3rd. And that'll be the day.
That's right. Phase one would be everybody write a really long requirements document, get everybody in the company to sign it and then start coding. And at the end of coding, start testing. And so Agile allows you more efficiency.
So it's more chaotic, but it's more efficient.
It can be more chaotic. It is not just a recipe just to not document anything or not communicate. Right. It's actually, and it's a proven methodology that organizations are more effective by using Agile.
Now, what percentage are using Agile versus Waterfall?
Depending on the research you look at, it's probably in the 60 to 70% of organizations are now, in the U.S., are now using Agile methodologies
and then
over
yours
traditional Waterfall.
Plays nicely with Agile.
It does. It does. Our founders saw when they started to build out this tool set is there wasn't a lot of innovation going on in building out testing software. There was really nothing that was looking to ride along with this Agile, wave that was coming. And so decided to build out tool sets that support these Agile methodologies, these quick iterations, needing to communicate between your development tools and your testing tools, knowing that people are automating their tests more often. And so we describe it as an agile transformation. You have a large organization. They don't just come in and snap their fingers and immediately they go from waterfall to agile. They have pockets of their organization that are moving to these methodologies.
The old people.
I did not say that.
Well, in the old way is what got them where they are, right? So why change that?
The traditional way, yeah, sure.
You know, there's certain software where that makes a ton of sense. If you're writing software for a Mars rover, you get one shot
If you're going to build a rocket ship, yeah, you might want to be really sure that everything works and everything's documented and a lot of people have signed off on it. So,
but it seems like the software as a service, it's meant to change a lot.
That's right.
That's one of the benefits of it, right?
I think it's one of the benefits, right? You don't have to reinstall across all of your servers. You get the latest and greatest with all of the fixes and enhancements.
Right, almost in real time.
That's right.
As fast as it's developed, it's kind of pushed out, right?
And that's what's changed the conversation, right? Is in the traditional days, you would build package software and you'd send it out. And if they didn't like it, then you got their feedback and you put it in the next version two years later. But in SaaS, right, we've already talked about it at the intro, is you have to go out and earn these customers' business every single day, right? So if I'm not having proactive conversations with these customers to understand how the product can improve, and then I can't go iterate with my teams to get that software out more quickly, then I'm, you know, getting them to a point of frustration. And because I'm having those more frequent renewal conversations, they can just pick up and leave, right? So that's the kind of the trust conversation that we have to start having with our customers and why we need the tools that can tell us who we should be talking to and why.
But it seems like they work hand in hand, because if a customer isn't using an element that you think is important or they should be using and you want to encourage them and they're not using it, you can learn from that as developing, right? You're like, maybe we should get rid of this feature if no one's using it. Why are we spending all this time and energy doing this? Why don't we put more energy into this thing that seems like more people are using and want to use?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you nailed it, right? If you're rolling out a new product, you want to know how actively are you using a new product. If they're not using an area of product and you're investing time in that area of the product, well, then you're kind of wasting money, right?
Right.
Those resources are limited. So that's a very good point.
And then it seems that now almost every product is driven, the customer is authoring it in some ways, right? Because their feedback is what's helping you decide what to prioritize and what either to do more work on or less work on.
Yeah, I think for successful companies, that's definitely true.
All right, Aaron, Kyle seems like he's at a point, and maybe was the very moment you started interacting with him, that he really gets this, he understands it. It wouldn't surprise me to learn that some of your folks that you're working with, though, at least initially, they may not be as informed, they may not be this far along. Do you find yourself in a position of educating new clients quite a bit on the kind of stuff that he's just, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
About?
Mostly because we work with a lot of very successful companies. And so it's super valuable to share what we've learned through our customers and what they've done to be successful. Right. It turns out to be something that a lot of SaaS companies are very interested to learn about. So take churn, for example. It's a really important topic. And you've got this spectrum from really sophisticated companies down to folks who are just starting to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And for the folks that are just starting out, it's very reactive. They learn about churn when the credit card cancellation comes across, right? That is too late. What you need is a time machine. You need to get you in your DeLorean and go back 60 days ago when they stopped logging in every day.
Right. That's when you got the indication. There were breadcrumbs that you just maybe weren't paying attention to.
That's correct. Right. Yeah.
So a big part of your value and maybe even part of your go-to-market strategy, you've got to educate. You've got to inform to... You got to educate the client before you can genuinely serve them completely.
Yeah, that's right. To us, you know, traditionally in the software marketing space, you've seen this triangular funnel at the marketing, you know, the marketing view of the world, which is you attract prospects to your website and you nurture them and teach them about your product. And eventually you close them and they become customers and everybody in the company high fives, right? Because the deal is done and you won. Mm-hmm. But it's not so with SaaS companies, right? Like
you're never done.
That's not the end. It's just the beginning.
That's right.
And so there's a ton of education that goes into figuring out like, okay, so what happens after the last stage in that funnel? Well, it starts to look more like...
It's not my job anymore.
Yeah.
I got a new guy now.
I'm just going to hand it off. Yeah. That funnel ends up looking more like an hourglass if you do it right, because now you're going to keep the existing customers you have. That's retention. And you're going to expand their account usage. So you're going to show them more things. You're going to move them from the, you know, from the bronze to the silver to the gold level plans. And then if you do it really well, it's so good that they start telling you their friends about you, and that's referral business. Yeah. And if you've ever sold anything, you know the easiest way to sell is through somebody giving you an intro saying, hey, this is really good. You should check it out.
So now what's next for you guys at QA Symphony?
Yeah, we've got a lot of exciting things going on from a marketing perspective. Just name Atlanta's best places in the finals for the Atlanta's best places to work. Had an article out in the Atlanta Business Chronicle today talking about the company from a product perspective. We're launching a new product called Insights. So when we talk about these testers, we have tools for testing and seeing the progress of testing for those day-to-day testers and even the test managers in some of these large organizations. But our customers are also very busy as well. And so when we start looking at these executives, yes, they get reports on how testing is going and whether the software is ready to release or not and how many bugs might exist and whether we should release it with these bugs or not. But as an executive, they need dashboards. They need to know, am I testing in the wrong place, the right place? Where are things popping up? And so we're releasing a product in September called Insights that's going to give visual dashboards for these executives to kind of know where their area of focus should be, right? Here's an area that isn't being tested that should be. Here are some things that you might need to focus on. How much time is being spent testing? Who's testing the most? How are some testers more efficient than others? Who's logging the most bugs? And so that's really going to help them get some insights into, you know, how do they start to make business decisions on, you know, kind of either how to reallocate resources or reallocate testing activities.
Now, are there certain industries that you guys kind of focus on? Do you have a sweet spot?
We do. Of course, technology companies that are more advanced in how they deliver their software and these agile methodologies is definitely a sweet spot for us. One of the downsides to Agile is in the manifesto, the Agile manifesto, they talk about code more and document less. However, when you get into a highly regulated industry, so like financial services and healthcare, you still have to have evidence of the testing that's occurring, right? They want to come in and see why did this happen and where did it happen and show me that you tested it. And so we have tools that help those industries. You basically just hit a record button. And when you're off doing your testing, it's recording everything that you're doing. And so at the end, you just hit stop and it has all the screenshots and thumbnails of everything that you tested. And so it can kind of store that away. And so we found in healthcare and financial services, a lot of companies are gravitating to us because they're saying, well, I thought I had to be traditional and I had to document everything, but yet now I can do all these agile delivery methodologies and use your tool set to kind of make that happen and be more efficient.
And then it kind of happens in the background. They don't have to do anything differently, right?
That's right. It's all doing it for them, right? So the testers are more efficient. The documentation is occurring. So it's a win-win.
Now, how do you get in front of these people? Like, who is the person at the company that hires you guys? Is it the CFO or the CIO?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're set up like most SaaS-based software companies, right? We have salespeople and marketing people, and we're generating leads, and we're setting up demonstrations. But generally, our champions are ahead of testing. They might be ahead of engineering. They might be ahead of development. But they're the ones making decisions for
the
organization.
Because they're the ones feeling the most pain on this, right?
Absolutely. They're the ones that they either might be using spreadsheets today, or they might be using a traditional platform.
So that's a good lead for you. If someone's using a spreadsheet, they should probably call you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to get 10, 15 testers to all work in a sheet, even a Google sheet, right, you're going to have inefficiencies in what you're
right,
doing.
Right, that's just built in there.
Absolutely.
Well, it probably wouldn't carry any weight at all, but I would refer you in a New York Minute. I'm learning a lot. One of the phrases that, I've picked up, and I think we ought to find a way to apply it to our own work, is this this idea of customer health.
Right.
I like that. Just captures so much, doesn't it?
It does. It's huge. I mean, so we track red, yellow, green. We track those based on login activities. If it's a larger account for us, you know, it doesn't necessarily much as matter that they have a lot of logins. So we compare their login activity to how many conversations we're having with them, right?
Yeah.
So if they, you know, if some of our largest customers have a problem, they're going to be calling me on the bat phone, right? They're going to be calling my cell phone saying I have an issue. So we have to make sure we're marrying up the login activity relative to the other things that are important. Like, did the person who signed the agreement, or did they leave? Did the company get acquired? Are they starting to log more support tickets than they had in the past? So all of those things measure up into health, and UserIQ is doing a phenomenal job in putting together that picture for us and helping us make decisions on it.
Now, Aaron, when it comes to health of the consumer customer, is that kind of a shift in the paradigm to even look at it that way?
I think you've had customer satisfaction surveys in the past, and depending on how well you react to them, you know, it all comes back to what do you do with those CSAT surveys? Yeah. But that's not the entire picture.
Anymore. Right. That seems like superficial.
That's right.
And this seems more so much in depth, more. And you're kind of really using data to really drill down to look at behavior and to see if that behavior is going to translate to, you know, them continuing to
That's
use
right.
the service.
Does the
or
behavior
not?
Match
right.
the words in the CSAT survey? And so, yeah, it really does kind of give you this time machine where you can see a little bit into the future of what's about to happen.
Right.
And it allows you to be more proactive. It also allows you to decide what you're going to focus on today. Because who has enough time to do everything on their task list?
But when that dashboard's flashing red, I bet all of a sudden it's important.
That's right.
That's telling you what's important.
That's right. If you've got 300 customers, you're not going to be able to look at every one when you come in on Monday morning. You might have time to take a look at five. Well, which five are you going to look at? So there are things that you can do to get a lot better at this. And that's what we're trying to learn from studying what Kyle and his team does, right? Like that's a big part of the feedback as well. How do you do it? What are the challenges that you face? Mm-hmm. And I remember that one of the first cab meetings we had with Kyle, we were talking through, you know, some of the things that we want to put into our new dashboard. And he went up to the whiteboard and said, I'm apologize for what I'm about to do, because I know as a software company that some of our customers have done this. He's like, let me show you what I would love to have, right? And you can't always build everything that goes up on that whiteboard,
right.
But there were some gems up on that whiteboard that we stole.
Yeah, Aaron had spent a lot of time in his product council. Hey, this is what we thought. And he brought in key customers, and we were one of them. And I just kind of train wrecked his day. But I mean, but hopefully the thought is, right, you know, I said, Aaron, if I'm going to use your tool, this is what I need it to do. And they, you know, seeing that I was a customer that was in line with where they wanted to go, right, because it's SaaS-based business and it's kind of democratized software, right, what's good for everybody, he said, yeah, this makes sense. Let's go make some changes. He isn't making those changes just for me.
Well, right? First he listened.
Well, right.
Right.
That's
he
good
listened
point.
In the first place.
Take that as right. a win right there. Not everybody gets
right. That's right.
Not
that's
everybody
right.
gets that.
And that's the lead or the health, right? That's, hey, Aaron, I'm using your tool and it's just not doing what I need it to do. That's a conversation I'm having with him. I am a red account to him, right? And he's like, okay, so what can I do? And I have the conversation and he either decides, yes, that's good for us, or maybe it's not, right? I mean, I might be a customer that's not in his sweet spot. I might not be a fit for him. It might be okay if I churn as a customer of his, because I'm telling him to build something that makes absolutely no sense for all of his customers, but it might make sense for me. Well, I'm a one-off, right? And so it may be okay in that instance to churn, but hopefully what he heard was, wow, this is good stuff. And this is something that all of our customers or a large percentage of our customers will want. So I'm going to go get with my development team and make some changes and then, you know, show those to us and see if that works.
Yeah. And it'll be an ongoing conversation, right? Like this is
right. It's not
we'll,
one.
That's the key right there.
Yeah, yep.
Only 74 more things for Aaron to do. And then I'll be green. I'm yellow. I'm currently yellow.
I wasn't
kidding.
Clear before the show started who worked for who.
Now it's clear.
I used to work on a team where our motto was, there's 3 full working days every 24-hour period. So plenty of time.
All right, Kyle, now for you, what's the pain that a company that might be listening right now is having other than using a spreadsheet to say that maybe they should call QA Symphony?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you guys, we've kind of joked about it, right? But people need to be testing their software, right? You cannot test everything, but things will get out and things will get to your customers. So if you don't have good tracking on that and you don't have good visibility and understanding where are the core areas of your application that you should be testing, who is doing the testing, how effective is that testing going, what percentage of our application has been tested in this cycle, where are the defects occurring, how do those defects relate to what we've tested, you know, these are decisions that people that are in testing and managing testing teams, you know, that they're held accountable to, right? If a software goes out and it has a major bug, the person that gets called to the carpet is the head of testing to say, how did this happen? And how will we stop this from happening again, right? And so
there's probably cursing in the middle of that, I would imagine.
I imagine. Yeah, those are not conversations you want to be in.
Right. I would think not.
So a goal should be avoiding those conversations. Right. And test managers, you know, they're clearly trying to avoid it, right? You can't catch everything. But our tools put together a lot of visibility in all the testing that is occurring. And we can do that on a subscription-based model, right? And as we've already talked about, it's pay-as-you-go. So we have a platform today with a suite of products today, and we're continuing to invest in that platform so that it gets to a wider audience and gets more functionality and allows test managers to be more effective at doing their job and getting called to the carpet less, I guess.
And then how quickly, once they subscribe, are they seeing an actual benefit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we actually give free trials to our software today, so people can just go right to the website, fill out a few pieces of information, and they can start trialing the software and starting to get familiar with it. So people see returns on investment pretty quickly. It depends. If they're in a spreadsheet, they're going to get ROI real quick. If they're coming off a traditional tool that may not be meeting their needs in regards to Agile and Agile transformation, that ROI might take a little longer, but they're starting from a different point already.
But on your website, there's ROI calculators. There's a lot of information, right?
That's right.
That can help a person educate them before they even pull the trigger.
There's ROIs. There's case studies in some of the verticals we work in. And so we often find that customers that are doing the evaluating can find one of our customers that is dealing with similar issues that they are dealing with.
And then the website for you guys?
www.qasymphony.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of the show.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me.
Now, Aaron, for you, coordinates?
Yeah, you can find more about us on useriq.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at useriq. We have a marketing team now, so
really?
We actually have a social presence. I am not the one that would be running social. My family knows I log into Facebook once a year, and I say, thanks for all the birthday wishes. And otherwise, my wife is giving me the updates on what's going on. So I'm pretty thankful for that.
And then for you, what's the pain the person or the company's having?
Yeah, for us, it would be companies that want to improve customer retention. And
so they've evolved past just kind of getting as many, you know, at first, like you said, everybody's heads down. I got to sell. Once you've kind of hit a certain level and then you're at a sales number that you're okay with, now you got to pay attention to retention, and that becomes more important.
It's crucial later in the life cycle, but it's just as important at the very beginning.
Right.
Kyle mentioned that they've got a free trial. So for a lot of SaaS companies,
that's the first sale, right?
That's how you first meet your customer is in the free trial. And a lot of companies that haven't put a lot of effort into this, they just hope for the best in that free trial, right? And if you think about that.
So it's free, then hope. That's the strategy.
Right.
That's interesting. Go to market strategy.
And typically what you're saying is, well, you know, we hope that the product is good enough that they'll just stick around, obviously.
Want to pay us.
But again, right? Like you could have a fantastic product, and the person who is testing it out is having a crazy busy morning and doesn't notice the one thing that is the most valuable thing to them that's going to change their life and make them happy.
So how could they have truly evaluated if they didn't click the red button,
or
the green button?
Right. And think about the tragedy of this. You've spent all this money on your marketing campaigns and your ads,
and
you've
got them
to the site, and you've done the impossible thing, which is they've actually taken time to pay attention to you and put their email address in that form.
Right.
They've logged in and they're now starting to use the product. Well, if they miss that critical piece of information, you've lost them and they're not coming back, and you're not going to have a business relationship with them. So you've spent all that money and missed them. If you can keep just two or three more of those customers by making sure that they get to the right place, that they're on a path to be successful, you don't spend any more money on marketing because you already spent it to get them there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But your business, the financials are completely different. You're on a different trajectory of success for your company, right? So that's why we like doing what we do, because if you go to business school and they talk about revenue optimization and growing revenue, and it sounds very clinical and cold, but really, if you do this right, you're just helping your customers be successful. And when you do that for any business, SaaS or otherwise, they're going to stay longer, spend more, and tell their friends about you. So that's all we're about. And we do that for marketing teams. We do it for customer success teams. We do it for product management teams.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, the website for you guys?
useriq.com.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for putting this show together. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our fearless producer. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.